Spark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
This is Kelly from the Peak Publication Society, SFU student-led newspaper. Recently, news organizations have been facing issues sharing news content. All news outlets, including small publications like us, have been affected due to Meta's refusal to comply with the Online News Act and compensate news companies. We have been serving our diverse student community for years and need your support to continue. If you'd like to contribute as a paid writer, illustrator, or photographer, follow us on Instagram at thepeak@SFU. Keep reading our stories at the-peak.ca. If Meta is listening, we're just a community promoting SFU events. Please don't block us again.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.
It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Living in and collectively participating in a planetary nervous system? Does the Earth itself have a reflective capacity, and are we all creative participants in guiding Earth's destiny? Today, we'll be focusing on the noosphere, which is a term coined by the late French paleontologist and theologian Pierre Teilhard de Chardin and the Russian biochemist Vladimir Vernadsky. The noosphere can be described as a global thinking layer formed by humanity's cognitive, social, and technological activities, where ideas, communication, culture, and shared knowledge transcend individual minds to create a unified planetary mind. Today, we'll learn more about how we can be active in this collective destiny with our guests, Dr. Brian Thomas Swim and doctoral student Monica DeRest-Bowles. Brian Swim is professor of evolutionary cosmology at CIIS, California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco, and he's the director of the Third Story of the Universe at the Human Energy Project. He's the host of the Emmy Award-winning PBS special Journey of the Universe, written in collaboration with Mary Evelyn Tucker. And he's also the host of the 35-part video series, The Story of the Noosphere, created for the Human Energy Project. Monica DeRest-Bowles, besides being collaborator with Brian Swim of the video series Story of the Noosphere, is a doctoral student at CIIS in the Philosophy, Cosmology, and Consciousness program, and her area of research is the Third Story of the Universe, and the potential emergence of a new structure of experience fostering cosmogenic awakening. They are co-authors of the book, The Story of the Noosphere, and the video series. And the book is illustrated by Brian's son, Sebastian Swim, which is just delightful. Join us for the next hour as we explore the evolutionary potentiality of humanity with our guests, Dr. Brian Thomas Swim and Monica DeRasse-Bowles. I'm speaking with Monica and Brian from their homes by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Brian, Monica, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Wonderful.
It's great to have you both here. And wow, this is a big evolutionary story, and we have a lot to cover. But first of all, what is the noosphere? And I just want to spell that for our listeners. Noosphere is N-O-O-S-P-H-E-R-E, noosphere. So tell me, what are we talking about here?
We're talking about the way in which a humanity has formed a new layer on the Earth community. So we have the geosphere, the rocks and the oceans and so forth. We have the biosphere spread out over the entire planet. And now we are taking in the fact that humans have created this mind-like connection all around the planet, a sphere, a film. So we think of the noosphere as the mind of planet Earth.
Earth has been constructing brains for 500 million years. The earliest was like this little marine animal that looks a little bit it's extinct now, but it looks a little bit like a scorpion or a spider. And then if you think about it, collective brains, it's been forming as well, like an ant colony or sea jellies and coral reefs, where individually the neuron, each individual atom or organism, like in a regular brain, all the different neurons are communicating with one another into a whole. But as Earth began to deepen into more complexification, then collective brains began to form. And now humanity is basically 8 billion human brains together, forming a collective brain that is capable of profound success simply because they're all autonomous brains working together in a collective humanity.
Well, tell me, I'm curious as to how does something that feels so amorphous as a collective brain or noosphere, how does it become stable or become an organized reality?
Well, I mean, an example I think brings it home. And we have the recent construction of the James Webb Space Telescope. This involved engineers from 14 different countries, and involved elements from around the planet, all brought together around the mathematical equations of Isaac Newton. So if we just look at that achievement, a number of humans, not one of them could have created the space telescope, not in the least. But they, all of them working together, created this amazing technology for discovering where we are in the universe. Humans, when they are pursuing a common aim, give rise to a new collective power that it really is unlike anything on planet Earth over the last 4 billion years.
And to add to what you just said there, Brian, it's in how it creates a stability. It's like it lays down habits. Each one of us is resting upon this deep history, a deep human history of Isaac Newton in his equations. But in everything that we do, we don't have to invent new things. It's available there for us. And now, so that we're simply born into a matrix of information that we can draw upon. So habits laid down.
going back to the James Webb telescope. And that was like beyond the Hubble telescope. It was, I think, launched in late 2021. And the significance of that was to be able to look in cosmic time or universal time, or I learned the new term Jiffy time, which I loved, made me laugh. Anyway, what is the significance of the James Webb telescope, and what is it telling us about our evolution?
The significance is that it's gathering data in the shadow of Earth. So if you can think of the sun and then the Earth, the sunlight comes and hits the planet Earth, and so there's a long shadow behind it. And so a million miles out from Earth is where the James Webb telescope lives. And this the possibility of having a telescope a million miles away that never once leaves the shadow. And that's the stunning thing. As the Earth is turning around the sun, James Webb is turning at exactly the same rate a million miles further away. So we've constructed a way of listening in the dark to the signals from the beginning of time. Now they are only now beginning to discover insights, data that no other telescope has achieved. But I guess the way I like to think about it is that go back when we were in the Paleolithic era. Now these humans have the exact same brain size that we do, the same anatomy, the same brain. And I'm for sure they were curious. They looked up, they wondered about these bright lights, eventually, giving names to them and so forth. You know, the unaided human eye can see around 3,000 stars. And they were curious. And so that curiosity continued and led to things like the James Webb telescope. And so we are now able to talk about the birth of the universe, the birth of the galaxies. We can see them as they are forming. I mean, it's so unbelievable. And all the point I'm trying to make is, this power comes from the noosphere. The noosphere is the Earth. It is the universe thinking through the humans about its own birth and development.
And doesn't it, Brian, what they're discovering is that the universe was more simple in its early formation, and it itself is evolving. And so that reflecting that on us as humanity, that there's a connection there. Am I?
A deep, deep connection, exactly. So that the telescope is able to see back to the time when the universe consisted of nothing more complex than a helium atom. Very, very simple era of the birth of the universe. Helium, hydrogen, lithium, that was all the structure. And immediately, meaning, within half a million years, began to create structure. And then, so we're watching this happen. And we come out of this construction process. And now we're taking in that we are, each of us is a 14 billion year creative process. There is no definitive human in the past that manifests what it means to be human. We're discovering what it means to be human through time. So, it's so thrilling to find ourselves right there at the front. I mean, this is one of the things that Monica loves to think about and we're in research on is we're not just in the universe, we're at the front of cosmological creativity.
So, Monica, help us out here.
Okay, well, from the primordial plasma to the stars, the galaxies, and the planets, and then, you know, this is all because elementary particles went into relationship with one another, and ultimately leading, you know, to us. But then, okay, so then that's like maybe the first big transformation. The second big transformation would be from a molten planet to the living surface of Earth, you know, to our biosphere. And that's all because of those chemicals coming into relationship, deeper relationship with one another. And then finally, a living Earth into a thinking Earth, which is the noosphere. Mm. And it's all because of humans deepening into relationship with one another.
I know that you all go back into the arc of human history and all the four eras of human history. And why is it important to kind of get an overview of where we have been and where we are now?
And, you know, it's a great question. Why is that important? The opposite view is hit the statement by one of the American presidents that history is bunk. In other words, it's the past. It's over. Why bother with it? So, I would respond by saying the greatest discovery in 400 years of science is the expansion of the universe. So we now know that the universe isn't a place in which things are alive and moving. Rather, the universe is an ongoing developing reality. That's the key point. That our discovery that we are developing, the universe as a whole is developing, is far greater than the discovery by Copernicus that we are a planet going around the sun. Now, that discovery changed the modern world profoundly. And here we are discovering something that's so relevant.
And the reason why it's important to go back to early hominids is because along with the universe evolving, humanity is as well. We didn't always have a reproductive imagination. We had to go into the caves for 70,000 years and draw bison and stick figures on the wall. And then that whole context evoked a reproductive imagination. And then, you know, we've been, you know, philosopher Wolfgang Leithold speaks about the eight transformations and nine, you know, turns in experience that we've had that brings us to the present moment, you know, where we have a certain kind of mind, and it's a structure of experience within which we perceive the world. We speculate that we're in the midst of a new one, and maybe we could talk about that later. Yeah.
Well, I, you know, in talking about that, I'm interested in how we can participate in this universal mind, so to speak, or planetary mind or living mind that encompasses the world. And if we're looking at it, I'm thinking about how, all right, my question has to do with the entelechy of the Earth, the aim of the Earth. What kinds of questions do we need to be asking ourselves to get in tune with the entelechy of the Earth? Like the acorn is in tune with the potential of the oak tree that it will be, or the caterpillar is in touch with the entelechy of the butterfly, but it doesn't see it as concrete. So, how do we then participate in this intelligence of the Earth and where the Earth wants to go, so we're in accordance with the Earth?
Another great question, and obviously there'd be many ways of answering it because it's so deep. But here would be one. How how can we touch into a harmonious alignment with Earth's entelechy, with Earth's aim? There's the question. Here's one way. You go to a body of water. It can be a lake. It can be the Puget Sound. It can be an ocean. But go to a body of water, and stand on the shore, and imagine the fish that are swimming out there. You can't see them, but they're out there and they're swimming. And we know so many things about fish, the amazing lives they live. The salmon going 8,000 miles, coming back. So they're amazing creatures. Now, but in the midst of your reflections, you ask the question, who is reflecting? And the first response is, well, you know, it's Justine. There she is. She's reflecting. But you had to learn a lot. You had to study. The fish are out there. You can't see them. But you know they're there. So really, the books and your teachers, they're involved there. If they weren't involved, you wouldn't have that experience. And then you go further back. And you ask the question, well, what do they have that enabled them to do this? Well, they had brains. They had brains. And now we get to the main point. You realize that one of the things we've discovered is that all of the mammalian brains are developments of some of the fish brains. The fish brains are far more diverse than mammalian brains. So there you are at the edge of the water, and you're realizing that you are using a brain that was developed by the fish that you're thinking about. And so you're forced to make this conclusion. Who is reflecting? It's the whole long process of life that's reflecting. It's the earth reflecting. And so the entelechy here is, Earth has a desire for many things, one of which is awareness of itself, self-understanding. So we see that we are fulfilling an aim of the earth because we are allowing the earth itself to reflect upon itself, something that has never happened at this level in the history of the world that we know of.
I know that one of the people or philosophers that you brought up in your writings was Zarathustra, born in 628 BCE, and an Iranian philosopher. And he asked a significant question, I think, that has been documented, is, am I on the side of truth or falsehood? And I thought that might be one of the questions we could ask ourselves about being in line with the aim of the earth and its thinking consciousness, the noosphere.
Well, what is notable about Zarathustra is, while he wasn't the first to conceive of an I, you know, the self, he was the first to give a method on how we could, how the masses of people or communities of people could have a practice that would allow them to also see themselves in this way. And it was very, you know, one of the ways to do that is to ask yourself, what are you? You know, am I this? Am I that? What is truth? What is the path? And so we're all, you know, and since that time, I think humanity is in large part, you know, we have to go through the growing up period of our lives, you know, but in large part, we're doing that. I think more important, I think now, is to understand the unification of the whole of humanity would be something that is something new that is happening to unify, and that isn't to become the same, because we continue to differentiate, but unity with differentiation, where we each recognize that we are at the center of a 13.8 billion year process, and that every entity has that dignity.
Well, I think that that's an important point, because right now we see in the news and all over the internet how polarized we are and fragmented we are. So how,
in our truth.
And you use the word convergence. Can convergence be applied in some way that's helpful to us?
Yeah, definitely. That is, it's one of the deepest insights that Teilhard de Chardin came up with, and you acknowledged him at the beginning. And it is that the human species began just as another primate species, but it did something to change the whole history of life. The phrase that Teilhard uses was, the human species folded back on itself. Folded back on itself. So what was typical for 3.5 billion years of every species, when they would spread out, and as they spread out into the ecosystem or beyond, they would differentiate into new species. But humans had this ability, because of the development of symbolic language, humans had this ability of recognizing the humanity in others. They recognized when they came upon a new group, they recognized that they shared this deep familiarity. They cared about children the same way and all the rest. And so with humans, life, instead of continuing to differentiate, life folded back and converged upon itself. So what are the consequences of this? And this is directly related to the question of what about the polarization in our world today? Here we are. We began, and we lived in groups of a couple dozen. And chimpanzees also live in groups of a couple dozen. They've been here many millions more than we have, and they're happy with that. They just stay with that, groups of a couple dozen. But for us, we found this connection. And we, as Monica said, we entered into new relationships so that we had these little troops of humans, early humans, grew into villages, thousands of people living together. And those grew into cities. Now you've got millions of people living together. And now we are at this next stage of the convergence is at this next stage of moving from the nation state as being the fundamental context of our relationships to the planet as a whole. So even though it seems as if we're struggling with this fragmentation and the hatred, the warfare, and so forth, when we take the larger view, when we look at the millions of years of hominid evolution, we see that Earth, going back to your word entelechy, Earth aims at ever-deepening community. And so we're in the midst of taking this process yet another level, going like we went from clan to village to city to civilization, and now we're moving from nation-state to a vibrant Earth community.
So when our ancestors left Africa, they spread out, they deepened into the biome of every single area, but they didn't change their biological anatomy. So that when they encountered predators that they wanted to kill, they would make a tool instead of biologically the years that would be required to grow a claw big enough to kill it.
So I want to go deeper into that. When humans left Africa, I just want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Brian Swim, and Monica DeBrasse-Bowles, and they are the co-creators of the book and the video series, The Story of the Noosphere.